Hello, and welcome to the Quarter Four AFE Results Presentation Conference Call. My name is Priscilla, and I'll be your coordinator for today's event. Please note this call is being recorded, and your lines will be on listen only. However, if you require assistance at any point, please press star zero, and you'll be connected to an operator. I will now hand over to your host, Mr. Eric Varit, to begin today's conference. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining us on the call this afternoon. Justin, Tim, and I will take you through the presentation, and we'll open the line to Q&A session at the end. Before we begin, can I please draw your attention to the disclaimer on page one of the presentation, in particular, the comments regarding the forward-looking statements. I'll now pass on to Justin Soldier for the full year highlights.
Thanks, Eric. We're pleased to report that AFE again delivered strong collections performance in 2022 for the full year. Gross attributable collections were 156.8 million euros, which is 19% up on the full year 2021. This includes a 12th consecutive quarter of collections outperformance to forecast in Q4. For the full year, the company also closed deals of 94.8 million euros at a high aggregate gross money multiple of 1.9x. This results in ERC at year-end of 552.5 million euros, 4% higher than prior year, with further embedded ERC growth of 66 million euros from already contracted follow-on investments. Leverage also continued to decrease sharply at 3.06x last 12 months adjusted EBITDA, which led us to revise our long-term guidance to between 3x and 3.5x, down from 3.5x-4x previously. The LTV of 64.6% compares to 66.8% as at the end of the prior year. Nevertheless, despite continued strong performance and an increasingly attractive pipeline, we have temporarily reduced deployment targets to enhance liquidity and further reduce financial leverage. We are also in advanced discussions with banks to extend our RCF maturity and actively exploring public and private refinancing options with advisors to address the August 2024 bond maturity. More broadly, as previously announced, the successful carve-out of AnaCap's credit business in Developed Capital was completed in Q3 of last year with no impact on AFE's structure or operations. We also completed a sale of our 30% stake in Phoenix Asset Management in Italy for 12.3 million euros, generating a 2.8 million euro profit. As you may recall, AFE held a minority interest in PAM, a business that we helped to establish as initially its first exclusive client. However, for over 5 years, PAM has continued to service debt on behalf of a growing range of third-party clients. Hence, we decided to pursue a sale of our stake as we remain an active client, but only a passive investor, which had no influence over the business or management, and we were not consolidating either revenue or profit from the position. Therefore, we felt releasing the capital and generating the profit was the right thing to do for the business. I'll turn it back over to Eric to touch on the financial highlights further.
Thanks, Justin. I'll now quickly cover the financial highlights on page seven. The group had the record annual collections and strong financial performance for the 12 months ending December 31st, 2022. The gross attributable collection for the year ended December 31st, 2022 increased to 156.9 million euros, which was 19.3% higher than 2021. Revenues were also up by 25.4% versus 2021 at 77.7 million. The revenues include 5.1 million of asset-light income, which is up 23% year-on-year as a result of a 23% growth of the assets managed by our Asset Solutions team. As a result of our strong collections period and our relatively low fixed costs and mostly variable cost structure, EBITDA increased to 116.8 million for the full year, which was 17.8% above 2021. On deployment, we decided to temporarily suspend deployment in Q4 to enhance liquidity and reduce leverage. Even though we only deployed 1.5 million in Q4, we had a strong year deployment with 94.8 million euros deployed at 1.9 gross money multiple. This is well above our ERC retention rate of 76 million. As a result, the ERC increased to 552 million euros, which was 4% above the prior year, and net debt remained stable at 357.1 million. As at the end of the year, we had a further $39.5 million of contracted follow-on investment that will further increase the RC when completed over the coming quarters. Finally, in December, as Justin mentioned, we signed the sale of Phoenix Asset Management, generating $2.8 million of profit for the year, which brings ACE total profit for the year at $24.5 million, which was up 161% from 2021. Turning to page 8, on this page, we wanted to remind you of the strong cash generation of the business, which is supported by our strong collection performance and low fixed cost base. Free cash flow for 2022 increased to €92 million, which was 19% increase from 2021. The 2022 free cash flow was driven by a record year of collections, together with market-leading collection activity cost ratio of 13% and core collection cost ratio of 27.1%. Our core collection cost ratio includes both our cost to collect and operating expenses. Moving to page 9, as you can see, as a result of our strong collection performance, our financial KPIs continue to be very healthy. Our leverage was 3.06 times, our interest coverage ratio was 5.8 times, and our LTV decreased to 64.6%. We also maintain adequate liquidity of 20 million as at year end and 27.9 million as at the date of the financials. We believe these metrics, together with our sustained collection and deployment performance, should be supportive of the recovery of our bond later in the year. Finally, moving to page 10, we wanted to highlight that the business is taking several asset and liability management steps to position itself for refinancing of our bond. Firstly, we are in active discussions with our RCF lenders who are supportive of an RCF extension to support our refinancing efforts. The expectation is that the RCF will be extended from its current maturity in June 2023 to December 2023 and reduced to $60 million from June. We expect to finalize the documentation process in April. Secondly, we'll be temporarily reducing our deployment to continue to build liquidity and deliver over the coming quarters. Thirdly, we'll continue our asset management initiative to accelerate collection and portfolio sales where optimal, as well as continue to manage our leasing and CapEx activities on our real estate portfolio. And finally, we're currently working with our advisors to assess the various public and private refinancing options, and subject to market conditions, we'll start having discussions with market participants on the various options in the coming weeks. I'll now pass on to Tim to cover the asset management performance.
Thanks, Eric. And in the next section, we want to provide some more insights into the ERC curve and the backbook portfolio. We start by turning to page 12, where we show you our 84-month ERC curve as at December 22. Here you see we have $553 million of ERC, which is the light green bars on the page, with a further $66 million of ERC embedded from contractual or contracted follow-on investments, with the beige bars on the page. By this, the additional ERC that we'll recognise as we deploy additional capital into existing deals. So as mentioned on previous calls, the majority of 22 deployment has been in direct real estate investments. The weighted average life of our ERC curve has been reducing, as real estate investments typically have a 3 to 4 year investment horizon compared to around 7 years for NPLs. So you can see the large majority of our ERC is expected over the next 3 years, and you can see good year-on-year growth over this period. The overall ERC curve is highly diversified and predominantly secured against underlying assets, and I'll dive into this in more detail over the next few slides. So across the page on slide 13, we've shown the slide regularly in our presentation, but it helps to show how highly diversified our $553 million of ERC is across both country and asset composition. From a country perspective, our total Southern European exposure now represents around 51%, which is down from 61% at the end of 2021, and that includes reductions in each of Italy, Spain and Portugal. Offsetting this has been increased in the UK and France, which combined now stand at around 45% of our 84-month ERC, so this is up from 33% a year ago. Overall, you can see it's very diversified and has become more balanced across these countries, with Italy at 28%, the largest individual exposure. In terms of asset composition, shown by the chart in the middle of the page, the level of our ERC backed by collateral has increased marginally from 83% to 87% year on year. During this time, direct real estate ERC has increased from 35% to over half of the ERC at the end of December, with a share of NPLs reducing to 48% over the same period. This shift again reflects the continued deployment over the past year in direct real estate,
And so now the result is the back books become pretty evenly balanced between direct real estate and NPLs. So moving across to slide 14, here we provide an overview of the NPL portfolio, which counts $265 million or 48% of the ERC, as I mentioned before. This is a very seasoned back book, where almost three-quarters of the ERC is coming from secured NPLs. The underlying book is very granular, consisting of over 126,000 loans with an average balance of just over 30,000 euros. Over 90% of NPL, our NPL portfolio is across Italy, Spain and Portugal, which these are core NPL markets and ones in which we've been investing in for well over a decade now, with Italy remaining our largest NPL market still. As Jeff and Eric both mentioned earlier, although we sold our minority stake in the Italian services Phoenix, we still retain them as a core servicing partner, given their strong and proven collection capabilities. On the page, you can see the secured ERC is heavily backed by around 280 million of collateral value. And again, this is also highly diversified across more than 7,000 individual real estate assets. So the 280 million of collateral value represents 144% of the secured ERC. So again, this shows the significant over-collateralization supporting our NPL ERC. On to slide 15, we take a closer look at the direct real estate portfolio. You recall from prior calls our strategy has been to build a diversified portfolio of predominantly income-generating assets targeting top-tier cities and locations in countries well known for us. As mentioned already, the direct real estate is around 52% of ACRC and spread across the UK, France and Italy, with gross money multiples on the underlying investments averaging a very attractive 2x. The portfolio is very diversified by asset type, with the majority in office, retail, residential and student housing assets. And across the portfolio, we are continually de-risking and creating value on the assets through active asset management initiatives, which I'll touch on over the page. As we move to slide 16, here we provide some insight into the subset of the portfolio that is currently income generated. This accounts for just under 200 million of ERC, or around two-thirds of the direct real estate ERC. This is a mix of 25 high-quality assets with over 200,000 square metres of livable space. We currently have around 243 individual tenants. You can see when we acquired the asset, there was already significant day one income, as shown by the average initial yield of 6.2% across the assets. We see potential for income enhancement across the assets by delivering active asset management initiatives. We are targeting to increase the average yield to over 9%, so this is a stabilised yield on the page. This asset management initiatives include investing small amounts of CapEx to make the assets more appealing to tenants. So this could be refurbishing parts of the building or improving the environmental credentials. We're also actively pushing new marketing and leasing activity to further attract tenants and re-gearing tenants or re-letting space on more favourable terms. So these initiatives result in over 22,000 square metres of vacant space being let since we acquired the assets. This has driven occupancy up by around 10%, since 83% at year end. In addition to this, we've also re-let or re-geared tenants on a further 6,000 square metres of space, with average rents across the book now standing around 7% above our underwritten target. So the combined impact of increasing the occupancy and achieving higher rents has meant we've been able to increase the contracted rent across the portfolio by around 20% or 21%. I mentioned we focus on this page on the income-generating sub-portfolio, but in addition to this, you have other assets that will become income-generating over the next 12 to 18 months. We deliver CapEx programs to lease up the assets. So that represents about another 17% of the current real estate ERC. So in total, the current, which is shown on the page, plus future income-generating assets, represents around 85% of today's ERC, or real estate ERC. So hopefully this gives you some insight into the high quality of our portfolio, including a strong level of over-collateralization on the NPL portfolio and high quality real estate assets, which already have good income generation and potential for further enhancement. I'll now hand back to Justin to talk about the strategic outlook.
Thanks, Tim. For the full year 2022, mentioned earlier, we've completed deployment of 95 million euros at a high aggregate multiple of 1.9 times, where we continue to selectively target what we see as the best risk-adjusted returns. We're currently maintaining a 650 million euro executable pipeline which offers further diversification across well-known countries to us and across a range of asset types. We continue to target predominantly real estate secured opportunities, typically mid-market-sized transactions off the run and outside of competitive auctions. The current opportunity set, clearly more than we've seen in some time, is being driven by sellers of high-quality assets in need of liquidity and facing refinancing challenges. We are seeing an increase in the NPL pipeline. However, with pricing continuing to adjust in that sector and primary supply lagging the cycle, i.e. banks only now increasing provisions for debt that they may eventually sell in future years. However, our current pipeline is not relying on new primary NPL volume, with a growing range of secondary NPL opportunities, as well as wider, predominantly secured assets as outlined. Turning to slide 19. Strong annual collections performance, as highlighted, has been up 19% year-on-year, which includes a 12th consecutive quarter above forecast in Q4. This represents strong free cash flow, driving leverage down to 3.06 times, which, as mentioned, has led us to revise our guidance down to 3 to 3.5 times. The deployment has remained disciplined and at increasingly high returns. But obviously, as we look forward, despite a very attractive pipeline and opportunity set, we are limiting deployment to increase liquidity. We're first working to extend the RCF, as Eric outlined, by the end of April, and we'll continue to work with advisors to explore refinancing options across both the public and private markets. Our existing portfolio remains heavily collateralized by real estate, with an additional 66 million euros of ERC expected from already contracted follow-on investments that we will complete. At this point in time, we're happy to turn it over to questions.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question or make a contribution on today's call, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause just for a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We'll take our first question from Andrea Pitotti from Blackstone. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Thanks for hosting the call. Just a quick question. You said that you are looking at an increased pipeline in the NPL, increasing NPL pipeline, but pricing continuing to adjust with banks increasing provision for bad debt. Could you expand what do you mean with pricing continuing to adjust? Which way is it adjusting?
I think what, as we've outlined in the recent past as well, the reality is primary supply has not increased significantly as yet in terms of actual deals coming to the market. And with a fair bit of capital out there still, although pricing and target returns clearly in this environment, I think for everyone have gone higher. In most cases, we have not seen the target returns on offer as attractive to us on a risk-adjusted basis as other opportunities we've been investing in. I think NPLs will remain a focus, but if you look at a typical real estate situation, we could have really three approaches to that. We could have a real estate asset where the right solution is to provide new financing or rescue-type financing to a borrower. We could have a loan that becomes an NPL, and we can acquire the loan itself to get to the asset. Or indeed, we can acquire the asset directly if that's the solution at that point in time that's most optimal. Typically, that's done enabling someone to access much-needed liquidity. I think it's fair to say that although NPLs are forming, some of the financing and direct real estate opportunities, as you've seen in our recent deployment, we simply have found more attractive risk-adjusted returns.
Okay, understood. And just a follow-up, just a banks increasing provisions for bad debt. Is it your view, or is it something that, given the macro we are in and the uncertainty we are in,
well,
is it what?
I think if you look across the system, they were increasing provisions through COVID. They then released provisions into profit in most cases, and I think generally you're starting to see an increase in provisions again. It's not unilateral. It's not across the board. Some banks clearly more than others are starting to get ahead of it. Some of the larger banks with the biggest buffers are the ones addressing things, maybe not surprisingly, most proactively. I guess the point we're highlighting is that it's still, in our view, relatively early in that journey, because clearly I think provisions will have to increase further and debt sale will eventually increase. It simply takes time. And banks have benefited recently from, quite a bit of excess profitability, and I think have been afforded the opportunity to be a bit more gradual in their approach.
Understood. And sorry, my last one, on the refinancing, have you engaged anybody, or are you just in a first stage approach on the sounding out potential advisors?
No, we're in discussions with, first of all, we want to finalize the RCF extension process, and then we're in touch with a few investors, and we're exchanging engagement letters and sessions. Very, very advanced in appointing advisors this week.
Obviously, it was important for us at this in the immediate past to get to our year-end cycle, complete our audit. Now that that's done, I think, it's fair to say we can be even more proactive with the benefit of these results.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll move on to our next participant, Christian Grain from Acunia. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hey guys, thanks for the call. Just a quick question for my general understanding. How do you define the ERC in the direct real estate space? I mean, so in the situation where you're going to acquire a property?
Yeah, I mean, every real estate investment has its own business plan. And as part of the business plan, in some cases, there is some follow-on CapEx investment, et cetera. So the way we look at the ERC from the business investments are the net cash flows coming to ACE after, for example, CapEx and after costs at the local entity level, and followed by an exit at the end when the property is sold. So because we don't own a majority stake, we typically have a joint control with a sister fund that Bell Capital is managing. We typically don't consolidate these entities, but the ERC is recognized based on the net cash flows to be received by ACE. So it's a mix of, rental income as well as an exit proceeds, which typically is the biggest part of the ERC.
Okay, so there's an assumption there on an exit price for the property.
Correct.
Yeah, similar to our MPL portfolios, where we have an assumption on exit of the property ultimately as well.
Okay, got it. Thank you. And just one question in terms of the process for the refi of the bonds. Are you able to tell us which advisor you're talking to? I guess you're probably not, but I figured I'd ask.
No, I think it's going to be a case where it will be made public in the coming week or so. I think it's going to be very quick, and then we'll approach market participants in the large holders bonds as well as looking at private refinancing options as well. So I think we'll be very transparent very shortly.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one. We'll take our next question from Benjamin Pasquale from Tikehau Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you for taking my question. Follow up one on the real estate portfolio. I would be interested in having your view on the current real estate market, given your exposure, so highly skewed to office and retail. So generally speaking, commercial real estate, one of the segments that has been let's say scrutinized over the past few weeks and months. So I'm just wondering the risk of ERC impairment on these subsegments going forward in case of, recession, increasing rates, inflation, etc. Thanks.
Sure. Clearly, it's something we remain very focused on, but I think it's important to point out that a direct reason we've been ramping up our exposure in those specific areas is because of the value presented by distressed sellers of assets. We're not taking a macro view that we believe a particular asset type or geography is necessarily a place we're expecting growth. As with everything we do, whether it's acquiring an NPL, where typically the real estate backing in an NPL portfolio is much worse quality, the direct real estate is much more targeted, specific asset by asset, meaning in an NPL portfolio you get some good with the bad. In this direct real estate, we're targeting value where we're seeing liability-driven or liquidity-driven distress, where we're picking up assets that we believe quite a significant discount to fair value, typically, as Tim outlined, with a high degree of embedded income already and the potential for further growth in income and then eventually sale. We're very mindful of interest rate risk. Clearly, is one of the things we look, and this is not new to the very recent environment. This is a key focus for underwriting ever since we've been investing in real estate, where we don't look to take significant cap rate or interest rate risk. We're looking for enough of a discount that can withstand significant further interest rate rises such that we still believe we can extract the value at exit that we're forecasting. So I guess the conclusion to that is, of course, everyone's exposed to it, is investing in real estate to some extent. I can't say we're immune, but I do feel confident that we've been capturing value at quite a heavily discounted level to where you might see typical market value on similar properties in recent years.
I guess to touch on the retail, I mean, there's two retail assets that we bought at the end of the stage. One of them is a hypermarket style rented out to an operator, which is 100% occupied in France, and the other one is a mall in the UK where the occupancy has been 97%, where the entry yield has been double-digit figures. So these are very opportunistic investment, but also very good, you know, entry points.
Yeah, I'll just add one final point, but not to make the answer too long. But yeah, just on the inflation point as well, if you look across the type of leases that we sign, yeah, typically there is some type of sort of inflation linked elements to the leases. So on the non-UK leases in particular, and that's both in the retail and the office side as well, they're around 80, you know, the indexation is around 85 to 100% of local price indices. The UK leases across our office assets typically include a rent review clause, which will bring back market level rents. So it's effectively a, you know, type of proxy for income enhancement or inflation protection. And that part, you know, when we've been buying these assets, particularly in the UK, where, you know, it's 2 or 3 years since the last rent review happened, that will actually give us the ability to increase rents on a number of the tenants there to capture some of that rent reversion and, you know, push up that the yield on the asset as well. So we feel like across the board, we've also got some good income inflation protection just from the nature of the leases across the portfolio.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one. It appears there is no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back to Mr. Eric Verrett to any additional or closing remarks. Thank you.
No, thanks everybody for participating. If there's any question, please reach out through the email, and no doubt you'll be hearing from us soon through our partners. Thank you very much. Have a good afternoon.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now disconnect.